Blog Talk Radio.
I want to know, are you ready? America. Thanks for joining us. I want to know, are you ready to take back our country? As the name of this song states, are you ready to join together on common ground? By that I mean God, family, country, constitution. If so, you've tuned into the right place. If not, hang out with us. You may find there's more right in you than you know. I'm Gary Benford, host of United Patriots Uprising, coming to you every other Monday night for 2 hours of guest-driven, conservative-based political talk. It's all about the message, friends, looking to enlighten, edify, and equip, so each and every one of us will be able to engage, expose, and defeat the radical left's Marxist agenda in the arena of ideas, leading to a red tsunami at the polling places. So are you with me, America? If so, strap on your helmet and take up your shield, because we're in a war for the soul of our nation, and we're not about to lose. Socialism, not in our America, not on our watch. No way, no shape, no how.
Hello, America. Hello. Hope you hear me. Is everybody there? This is United Patriots Uprising, and I am your host, Gary Benford. We do this on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. The number to call in is 347-637-3942. That's 347-637-3942, and I just want to make sure you can hear me, so I'm going to check with my producer, James Bostic. Can everybody hear me? Because I just want to make sure that I'm on the air. Okay, seems like I am. That's all I needed to know, so we will go ahead with the show. All right, I have a list of names here, and I think you're going to know most of these people, if not all, and if you listen to the show, I'm sure you know a couple of them. Tom DelBaccaro, John DeLimmie, Donna Fiducia and Don Nguyen, Dr. Elena George, John Guandolo, Jean Ho, Lucretia Hughes, Claire Lopez, Trevor Loudon, K. Carl Smith, and Presley Stutz. Those people may have some things in common, and they may not, but there are two things that I definitely know they have in common. They all spoke at the Rock the Red USA Conservative Convention in Greenville, South Carolina, back in January of 1919, and they've all been frequent guests on this show. They've all made more than one appearance on United Patriots Uprising. I thank you for that. And by the way, speaking of appearances on the show, there will be a special show. Like, I know I only do this the first and third Mondays of every month, but June 28th, we're going to stick in a show, because my very first show was June 29th, a year ago. June 29th, a year ago, was my first show. The guests were Burgess Owens, Morgan Brittany from Dallas, Nick Searcy, you remember Nick Searcy, the actor also, and Curtis Bowers. That was my first show ever. This is the 24th show. We are going to have an anniversary show and bring on some of the special guests who have been on the show over this year. And thank you for keeping me on the air this long. And thank you for supporting this show. I try and get the best guest I can get. And boy, that roster at Rock the Red back in January of 2019 opened my eyes. And if you've heard them on this show, I'm sure they've opened your eyes as to what is going on in this country, what is happening to America, why it's happening to America, and what we have to do to save America. And along those lines, guess what? Back by popular demand, here comes Rock the Red again. It's a little bit behind schedule because the virus shut it down for a while, but Presley Stutz has it up and running again. It is going to be held in June coming up. I'm going to let him tell you about this. We're bringing back on the Rock the Red chairman, Mr. Presley Stutz, to talk about the roster for this Rock the Red, which I will tell you some of the names I mentioned will be back. John DeLemme will be speaking. Claire Lopez, who will be on this show, will be speaking. Trevor Loudon will be speaking. Presley will be there, and he's coming on now. And K. Carl Smith, who's be on this show, will be speaking. And Donna Fiducia, the original Fox Babe, and Don Newen will be the MCs, and they rock the house. So I'm happy to bring back to fill us in on what is going to be happening and when it's going to be happening in Greenville, and I will be there, and so will my producer, big boss man, Mr. James Bostic, who will be coming on a little bit later on the show because seems like he's going to be involved in this thing, and we have to find out what that's all about. But for now, right here, right now, the chairman of Rock the Red, I welcome back Mr. Presley Stutz.
Well, hey, Gary, thanks for having me on. It's just a pleasure to be back with you. And a lot of things have been happening around America, and we realize that this nation is in trouble with Joe Biden, that's for sure. And our mantra, our philosophy at Rock the Red is that we need to educate, motivate, and activate people. And that's exactly what we do. And so we've got it coming up. As you said, we were hampered. I couldn't find a hotel that was willing to lease any space to us with much more than 150, 200 people. But now the restrictions have been lifted in South Carolina. So in about 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, a little less than, we're having Rock the Red in Greenville, South Carolina at the beautiful Embassy Suites Hotel and Golf Resort on Verde. And it's going to be the weekend of Friday and Saturday, June 4th and 5th. So looking forward to seeing you, Gary. All of those names that you just mentioned, one thing we have in common, Gary, we're friends with all of those people. And these are subject matter experts that are flying in and driving in from all over the country. And so we're really looking forward to a great time. So appreciate you having me on.
So am I, because this
Yes.
So am I, personally. It revolutionized my life because it opened my eyes, because I thought I knew what was going on. But when you listen to these experts, when you listen to people like John Guandola, who's a former FBI agent, Claire Lopez, who's coming on now, who had been with the CIA, with Tom Holman, who had been the head of ICE, who is coming back again. He'll be on the panel again this year. When you heard from Buzz Patterson, who had worked in the Bush and the Obama administration, and you're just getting the parallels of everything that was going on, it was eye-opening. So before we move ahead, please tell the people, some of the people, I've given them the names of people that were there last year that are on my show. I've added Tom Holman. He was there the last time. Give them some of the new names that are coming up, because there's some names that do rock.
Well, yeah, and I'm probably going to miss somebody, so you all forgive me, but they can find the entire lineup at www.rocktheredusa.com, rocktheredusa.com. We've got a young man. His name is Eric Corcoran. Eric is from Ireland, and he's more patriotic than most Americans. He grew up watching socialism encroach upon Ireland and in Great Britain, and his parents moved him to America when he was 8 years old. And he loves God, and he loves his country. And Eric is just a great spokesman for American heritage. He'll be there. We've got another lady named Eliana Brooks. Eliana, heartbreaking story. She was trafficked. She thinks she's from Panama. She doesn't really know. At 3 years of age, her parents let her be trafficked up here to the United States, hoping for a better life for their daughter. Unfortunately, she was sold by coyotes into the sex slave traffic business. And for the next 15 years, she was used as a sex slave. Phenomenal story of courage that this woman has gone through. We've got her coming to speak. It'll open a lot of people's eyes. We've got, let's see, who else do we have? We have Trevor Loudon, The Enemies Within. Trevor, he'll tell you that probably a good 30 or 40% of our members in Congress, in the United States Senate, either have or are full-fledged card-carrying members, have relationships with communists or are card-carrying members or Muslim extremists, Islamists. Trevor's here. Clara Lopez, former CIA analyst. She understands the Soviet and the Sino-Islamic threat. She will be here. Tom Holman, Tom's spending a lot of his time on the border, former director of ICE. He'll be coming. We have Lynn Wood, Mr. Lynn Wood, election integrity, Mr. Election Integrity himself. He will be here speaking. There's a special dinner with him Thursday evening before the event starts, and then one on Friday evening. He's going to be our keynote speaker. Saturday, we have a number of other speakers. We have Pastor Tim Buck, who understands the problem with cancel culture and what's happening to Christians here in America. We've got Dr. Hank Cooper. Hank was Ronald Reagan's ambassador with the Star Wars Initiative. Dr. Cooper handled the entire Star Wars Initiative, SDI, for Ronald Reagan. Hank is just one brilliant man. And he speaks a lot about the threat to EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, how just one or two nuclear bombs exploded 50,000 feet in the air can wipe out half the country's electric grid. We've got, Tracy Beans.
Tracy Beans.
Oh, gosh. Tracy Beans is going to be speaking. Tracy's a good friend of mine. She has Uncovered DC. Tracy is just an expert in investigative journalism. She's going to be speaking. Our secretary of our state treasurer, Mr. Curtis Loftus, one of the few conservatives that we really have left in our state government. He will be speaking. I know
I'll throw a couple more out because there are two.
Yeah.
John DeLimmie will fly up here and beat me in the head if I don't. So how did you leave me out? John DeLimmie
K.
Carl Smith will be on this show. They'll both be there.
Yeah, John and K. Carl. Listen, I'm sitting here in the room. I'm at an event, a Republican Party event. They got a lot of loud music outside, so I'm indoors in a room by myself. But, yes, John and K. Carl, just two great, brilliant gentlemen, patriots.
And tell them who the keynote is for Saturday. This will excite
the
people.
Keynote, don't tell anybody, but we've got General Michael Flynn flying in, okay?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So we're really excited. General Flynn is just an unflinching patriot, and his hashtag is Fight Like a Flynn. And we love that man. I spent some time with him here in the last month. He's made a couple trips into South Carolina. So we're really excited to have him back with us at Rock the Red. So it's, Gary, it's just going to be a great weekend. We've got some unbelievable music. We've got a battery coming in with a Civil War cannon. We're going to hear some big loud booms. I've got some artists coming in. We've got a number of things happening. Vendors are going to be all over the promenade of the atrium of the hotel. But this is an opportunity for people to come together, to network, to fellowship, to get educated, to get motivated, and then to go back home and get activated in their communities. Because if we don't get activated in our communities, we're in trouble. If I may, Gary, I started an organization that is kind of we revamped the Tea Party, and we are called the United Patriots Alliance. And why did we come up with that name? And it's very similar to your name, by the way, your radio show.
Uh-huh.
But you know, God kind of just starts giving all of his direction, right?
Got that right.
You know, united we stand, divided we fall. We've all heard that. And Ben Franklin said to his fellow signers when they were signing the Declaration of Independence, he said, gentlemen, we surely now we must hang together, or surely we will hang separately. And we are at a very crucial, pivotal point in the history of this nation. There's a cultural war going on for the soul of the minds of our children and the people in this country. It's called the cancel culture. And we've got to unite together. We've got to come together. We've got to come together as patriots. You know, our founding fathers, Gary, they pledged to one another their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And this is the time that men cannot shrink and go hide. This is the time where we must be engaged, be willing to show up. We must be willing to stand up, and we must be willing to speak up. Because when we do, we have an impact. But when we remain silent, all that's necessary for evil to triumph, Edmund Burke said, is for good men to do nothing. And that's what's been happening for way too long. That's why this country has slipped down this slippery slope. You know, I built a new home about 13 years ago, and it took the contractors almost 7 months to build my home. I was getting impatient. But, you know, to build something right and to do it right, you've got to take your time. But, you know, someone could come to my house and take a small match, and they could light that match, and they could burn my house down in a matter of an hour. So what took 7 months to build could be destroyed in an hour. And look at this country. We're 245 years old as a nation. And America is great because the people of America are great. We are what makes America. But if we fail to get involved, these communists, these socialists, these fascists that are coming along with this cancel culture, they can destroy us in a matter of a few days. And that's what Joe Biden is doing with his cancel culture administration. So we have to stand up. We have to show up, and we have to speak up in order to stop this destruction going on in America.
Yes, indeed, Presley. And for people that don't know, because I was walking with my best friend, Kenny Harmon, yesterday, and we ran into a young liberal. And when we were talking about to him, he was 15 years old. He listened to us for 45, 50 minutes, and we were talking about what was going on in the country. And when I told him they're Marxists, he asked me what was a Marxist. So for people who may not be sure and may not quite understand what you just said, Presley is talking about this new thing called cancel culture, C-A-N-C-E-L, not cancer culture, but cancel. They're trying to cancel the Constitution. They're trying to cancel the First Amendment right, the right to bear arms. They're trying to cancel everything that this government put forth under the founding fathers and the auspice of God and change that and send us down a socialism path on the way to communism. Now, before we go any further, Presley, you know, please, you know, because people, they listen, they don't, you know, you never know where people are within the show. So please tell people that are interested in finding out about this, how they can get tickets and how they get, where your website is, so they can learn all the information, and then we'll continue.
Sure, Gary. They can go to rocktheredusa.com, rocktheredusa.com. They can purchase tickets there. They can also book the hotel room. If they book the hotel room before midnight on May the 20th, the hotel is holding a special $99 a night rate, and that's for a suite. That's not just a room. That's for a suite at the Embassy Suites Hotel. So the rates are going to go up after the 20th of May, but we're only 2.5-3 weeks away from this event. So we're getting the word out. We had a lot of people register today. They're starting to register, and we're just looking forward to a great time.
And I can vouch for this, people. I went 1.5 years ago when I didn't even have my own show. I just had a segment on Rocky and the Wolfman Radio. I did a segment, and I went down there, and he's telling the Embassy Suites, This it's beautiful. You know, two-room suites is beautiful. It's a golf country club. And the people were great. You know, you had all kind of things. You could pose with a Trump picture, a car. They had Danny Hamilton brought the Trump bus. So we posed with the Trump bus. There was all
vendors.
He's bringing the bus back.
He is. Now, he's got it wrapped in Keep America Great right now.
Okay.
But he's bringing the bus back, and it'll be here. Yes, it will.
And the food was great at the banquets and everything, and you're going to have a great time. I wanted to, Preston, before we go on, because we do have a little time, I want to tell this story. At that year, I hadn't heard of Rock the Red. I was saving my pennies, thinking I was going to save $1,500 or $2,000 to try and go to CPAC. And I had had several guests who had come on with me previously on my other show. Lucretia Hughes had come on, and she said, no, you don't go to CPAC. You go to Rock the Red. And Donna Fiducia had just become a Facebook friend of mine, and she said, hey, Gary, Don and I are hosting. Come on down. And it was everybody I talked to. Then it was Gene Ho, and then it was John DeLemme. These were all Facebook friends. They said, no, bro, you don't want to go to IMAX. And the one thing that really sold me, and there's a reason I'm telling this, because I want people to understand something. The one thing that really sold me, Lucretia Hughes told me, you're going to go to CPAC, and you can see the event, but you won't see the people. She said, because that is an event, and it's like a concert, basically, and they're gone. She said, with this event, you will be with the people, and everybody's personable. Even when they aren't speaking, they're around the hotel. You'll get to talk to them. And I remember that Friday night, you know, having conversations with Don and Donna, with Trevor Loudon, who'd already been on my show, with Tom Holman, who I just met, Claire Lopez, Tom Lopez. Everybody was just, and you're just bonding with people and talking. And I'm telling you, people, this is like, as Presley just said, it is a fellowship. That's exactly what it is. So please, yeah. Presley, tell people, how did this start? Where did this brain trust come from, and how long has it been in operation?
Gary, it's a good question, and I got to go back to 2012. This was a couple of years into the Tea Party movement around the country, and we made it very clear to our government that we, the people, were not going away. And a gentleman named Joe Dugan started a little conference. He may have had 100 or so people in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, in January of 2012. And I said, Joe, why do you have it in January? He said, that's when I could get cheap rooms, cheap conference center. In the winter, nobody likes to go to the beach. They all want to go in June, July, and August, right? And so he did it in January. But there was also another method to his madness. South Carolina is the first in the South primary. And for years, whoever presidential preference primary in South Carolina has gone on to be either the nominee of the Republican Party or the president himself. So this event that Joe started, and he called it the South Carolina Tea Party Coalition. Now, that was a mouthful. And Joe ran that for many, many years. He had a lot of help with a lot of volunteers. And unfortunately, about 3 years ago, Joe's wife passed away. And then just a little over 2 years ago, Joe himself was diagnosed with stage 4 throat cancer, larynx cancer. And he knew he had to pass the baton, and he chose me. And I fought it. I did not want to do it. But eventually God spoke to me and said, yes, you've got to do it. So the baton was passed to me. And I said, Joe, if I do this, there are a couple things I'd like to do to change a few things up with your permission. And he said, what's that? I said, well, you live in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I live in Greenville, South Carolina. I prefer to do this event in Greenville, South Carolina, because I know the area. And he said, that's fine with me. He said, I did it in Myrtle Beach because that's where I lived. And the second thing I said is, Joe, I would like to kind of make the name a little more youthful, because, Gary, let's face it, you and I are old timers. We're becoming old timers. And we have got to get the youth of America involved in politics.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And it's a dirty business. I had an old gentleman say to me about a week or two ago, he said, you know, I would rather shovel horse manure than get involved in, in partisan politics. And I said, well, why is that? He said, well, one, it's a cleaner business, and two, it's more honest. and he's correct. And,
wow.
So we changed the name to Rock the Red, and you know, our website is Rock the Red was already taken, so we took rocktheredusa.com, and here we are. And last year, Gary, January of 2020, was our first year using the name Rock the Red. Now, let me take you back with Joe Dukin again. So let's go back to 2015. The event was happening in Myrtle Beach, and a lot of the presidential wannabe candidates were putting their toes in the water to see what kind of reaction they would get. And a gentleman named Donald Trump called Joe.
I remember.
Hey, could I come down and speak at your event? And Joe said, certainly, Mr. Trump. And so in January of 2015, now this was a full 6 months before Donald J. Trump announced that he was going to be run for president of the United States when he and Melania came down the escalator there in Trump Tower. As a matter of fact, Rock the Red was the very first event that Donald J. Trump went to as a potential political candidate. And so,
and that springboarded him. He springboarded right from there.
Yes, it did. And he got a lot of attention. People came by the droves in 2015, 2016. Thousands came to the event. And, the rest is history. But South Carolina, we put Donald J. Trump on the map. South Carolina, whoever runs for president in 2024, whether it be Donald Trump or Rick DeSantis or whoever, we are going to be putting them on the map. So that is the importance of this event that we do. And we do it normally we do it January, February timeframe. But like you say, because of COVID this year, we had to wait till the summer. But we're back in the saddle. We've got a few tickets left. We just want people to get online, book their tickets, get your room before the 20th. And looking forward to seeing you again, Gary, making a lot of new good friends down here.
Now, thank you, Presley. And I can't put this on God, but God knows how I detest cold weather. If you remember, I didn't even want to go out and take a picture at the bus with the Trump bus. People were laughing at me because, you didn't want to put a coat on or in your suit. I'm like, I'm not going out there because, trust me, I'm an 80, 90 degree guy, so I'm looking forward to this. So thank you. Tell everybody.
What are you doing living in New York City? Come on now.
I'll explain that story to you when I see you, because if it was up to me, I would have been long gone and probably in your state. But God has other plans.
I understand.
I'm needed here. I'm wanted here. Somebody's got to be salt and light in these hell holes, right? I guess that's my calling.
You got that right.
I guess that's my calling. So please tell the people once more how to find the website, and thank you for coming on.
Yeah, rocktheredusa.com, rocktheredusa.com. You can find the schedule, the agenda. You can get your tickets there. You can book a room there. You can see all the speakers. Everything is there. It's a one-stop, take about 15, 20 minutes. You can search the whole website and see everything about the event. So going to be a great time. Going to have a lot of good fun. And
absolutely.
And,
Gary, Presley,
for having me on. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And Presley, people have to understand that 99, and it's really, trust me, it is 99. It was 99 2 years ago. It's 99. And people, it costs more to go to Met and Yankee game. You're going to get a great deal, So.
Oh, yeah. Now that's for the room. The tickets are a little more expensive.
Right. They'll understand.
Because, It takes almost six figures for me to put this event on, okay? And we feed them very, very well. And now you can buy a ticket without food, and you can go out to McDonald's if you want, or you can eat some nice, healthy food there that they've got, these very well-seasoned chefs that create some really, really good food. So, but the other tickets include the food. The VIP ticket includes the food for Friday and Saturday. Now, there is a separate ticket on Thursday evening with Lynn Wood. That's a fundraiser, and that ticket is a separate ticket. But if somebody buys the VIP ticket, It includes all of their food for Friday and Saturday during the event.
And I'm telling you, people, you won't regret it. Once again, the chairman of Rock the Red, Presley Stutz. Thanks for coming on, Presley.
Thanks, Gary. God bless. Take care.
God bless you. Presley Stutz, chairman of Rock the Red, and he'll be down there. He'll be taking pictures with you, and he'll introduce you to people. And I'm telling you, this is a very, very personal thing. It's a very, very personable thing. People will, people do not have their noses stuck up in the air. You'll be able to take pictures with all these guests, and they don't leave. It's not like they get on the stage, speak for 45 minutes, and they catch a plane or a limo out of there. They'll be signing autographs, signing their books or whatever, you know, they're involved with. They'll hang around. They'll take pictures. Some of them stay the whole weekend. It was a great time. And the next guest I met down there, she had come on my show when I was doing the Rocky and the Wolfman thing. And I met Claire Lopez down at Rock the Red. And Claire and I have talked quite a bit since then. And it looks like Claire's been on my show almost more than I have on my own show here, because I think this is her sixth appearance. But she's a former CIA operative, and among other things, you know, her main trust is about national security, and she's keenly involved with keen insight and expertise on Islamic terrorism and Middle Eastern threats in the United States, and with what's going on with Hamas and Israel. We really need to know what's going on. She will be speaking on Friday, 4:30. They have her scheduled at Rock the Red about the Sino, she'll tell me how to pronounce that, Sino-Islamic threat. So we need to find out what that's about. I'm not asking you to give up any trade secrets, but whatever you can tell us. Glad to welcome back to the show, Claire Lopez.
Hey, Gary, hi. Thanks for having me back again, and very glad to be with you.
Yeah, Claire, you know, you've almost been on it. I'm putting together, a show coming down the line. I was looking at the people. You've been like six times. I've barely been on six times. I've done the show 24 times.
It's really been that many.
It's that many, because every time I look, I said, there's Claire again. And you know why you're on? Because you, among others, have a wealth of information that America needs to know. So let's start off right here before we even get into your background. Can you just give people a little bit, you know, you don't have to give away your speech, but a little bit of what, is it Sino or Sino?
Well, I think I'd probably say Sino.
Sino-Islamic, what is that? And just give us a little idea of what you're going to be speaking about.
Sure. So this was a topic actually proposed by Presley, your guest right there before me, Presley Stutz. And what he wants me to talk about, and I'm very happy to do it, is to explain how the current communist revolution, because that's what it is unfolding here in America. And he calls it Sino-Islamic because of what we sometimes call the red, black, green axis, right? So red are the forces of Antifa, the communists, the Marxists. The black part of that is Black Lives Matter movement, and that includes all of the affiliated groups that many of them are Maoist. I mean, openly pro-Maoist Chinese on their websites and in their spoken presentations. And then green, of course, is for Islam, and that is in the United States. The Islamic movement is led by the Muslim Brotherhood. It's multitude of front groups, and those front groups are explicitly and very openly aligned with the Black Lives Matter movement.
Okay, so what are you going to tell people about these groups? Are you telling them that where they used to be separate groups that were splintered, like, okay, the Muslim Brotherhood's over here, Black Lives Matter's here, Antifa's there, the Maoists are here, you know, the people that still want to try and raise up the Third Reich over here, or whoever, the white supremacists over there, you got all these groups, are they coming together?
Well, you know, it would be natural to look at these different, the red, the black, the green, these groups, and say, well, you know, aren't these quite different? Excuse me. Aren't these quite different with, you know, different backgrounds and different ideologies? And we'd say, yeah, they are. But that what brings them together at this point in time is a shared hatred of the United States of America, our foundational Judeo-Christian principles of the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and really hatred for Western civilization. And the desire that brings them together, this unifying hatred, is aimed really at collapsing our system, collapsing law and order, causing enough chaos that out of that chaos, each one of these groups thinks that it's going to be the one to be able to seize the advantage.
And, you know, that's the interesting thing, because speaking to you before, and also Trevor Loudon, who I know you know, and you both basically say the same thing. So you have the communists on one end trying to collapse Western civilization, and then you have Islam, the Islamics, on the other end, and they're both trying to get rid of the United States and Israel and collapse our freedom and turn the whole thing Islamic communist, and then they'll fight over our carcass to see who ends up being top dog. So is that kind of what this is about? Like they're all band together, and if they were ever successful getting rid of us, then they'd all turn on each other.
Well, something like that, I guess. I mean, we don't really know, you know, how that would turn out, and we hope we never get to a point like that. But I think that's the sort of the thinking, if you want to put it that way, of the different groups, that the immediate objective is what bands them together right now, and they'll just kind of sort things out among themselves later on.
I hear you. Now, people are going, yeah, this sounds well and good, but who are you? So please tell people who you are, kick out your credentials, and tell them why you know what you know. And one thing I learned about the CIA that I really didn't understand until I started speaking with Claire, the CIA operates basically outside the United States. In other words, the national security and the things of the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, it's involved in world issues. So it's not like, you know, inside this country with what's going on with the Marxists and these crazy Bidenites or Democrats or whatever. So this is what you've had to do and what you've dealt with for decades has been dealing with world terrorism, correct?
Well, not completely exactly.
All right. Tell them who you are.
You know, that the agency never meddled internally in the United States domestically. But I think we've seen over the course of the last 4 or 5 years with Russiagate and FISAgate and all the rest of it, you know, aimed at tearing down our president, Donald Trump, that it certainly looks like there was some involvement there that should not have been going on the domestic front. But when I was in government service, and that was way back, during the Cold War and just after the Cold War, my focus was on Russia, first Soviet Union, then Russia, served all over the world in many different places, but never in the Middle East and never in Russia, of all things. Many other places, but not those. And then after that, went into some federal contracting, doing analysis and analysis work, research and analysis for different companies, began to do some training and teaching and speaking, and then really gravitated to Washington, D.C. and think tank world, and spent a number of years there. Again, always focused on national security threats, both domestic and coming from abroad, from foreign sources, developed a special expertise in the Middle East on Iran. But more recently, I'll tell you, I've been turning a lot of attention over the last year to China, which I'd never focused on before, but have now. So that's the Sino part of the Sino-Islamic threat that Presley's got me speaking on.
Understandable. Now, most of us understand if they watch the news, and to me, it seems like the news is trying to hide this, at least the disingenuous mainstream media, that Hamas attacked Israel. And of course, what would you expect? We kept warning people that if you put the Democrats back in the White House, that Biden, Hyde, and Joe Biden is going to start reversing all of President Trump's policies, that Barack Obama's deal with Iran and all the money will go back. And if they get the money and think they can deal with these weak Democrats who are the useful idiots, if not the Marxists that Stalin and Lenin talked about. Either they're in part of this plot or they're so ignorant they don't even realize what's going on. Duh, we knew they'd attack Israel. I was concerned that Netanyahu may say, to heck with them, I'll get them first. But the bottom line is, we knew this was going to happen. It has happened. What does this do to our national security? How do you see our national security right now? Because obviously that's a hotbed going on right there between Israel and Hamas.
The whole world, I mean, feels it when American leadership is lacking. Chaos always ensues. Things are going to hell in a handbasket, both domestically, everybody can see that at home, and worldwide. The very brilliant Victor Davis Hanson has
absolutely
an essay. He's got a terrific essay out at American Greatness, just dated yesterday, May 16, and it's called How to Ensure a Middle East War in 5 Easy Steps. And what he says is, number one, revive Iran. In other words, beg to be left back into the nuclear accord, the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Offer the Iranian regime all kinds of relief from the very tough sanctions that had, you know, really begun to have an effect. Unfortunately, brunt of it being taken by the Iranian people, but nevertheless, it was a pressure on the Iranian regime too, and also, you know, not allowing them to sell their oil on the open market. So that's all been reversed. Revive Iran is number one. Number two, discourage Arab moderates. This would mean what we're talking about, the Abraham Accords, the wonderful progress that President Trump and his team made in the Middle East with agreements, full recognition of relationship between Israel and United Arab Emirates, Israel and Bahrain, Israel and Sudan, Israel and Morocco. And we knew all along that Saudi Arabia was behind and encouraging and supportive of it. That's now been thrown out the window, although I would say that the Abraham Accords will survive as far as they've gone so far, maybe not without the encouragement of the U.S. to go any further, but they will continue just because those agreements, full establishment of people-to-people relationships, not just governments or ambassadors or embassies, but it's in their benefit. It's in all of their benefit to continue that. Nevertheless, some of those are feeling rather kicked to the curb right now. Number three from Victor Davis, reboot corrupt Palestinian dictatorships. You know what they've done? The Biden administration has turned around and returned paying the Palestinian Authority millions of dollars. And what did they do with that money? Pay for slay is what it's called. They use the money to pay either the jihadis in jail for having attacked and killed Israeli citizens or to their families for those who died in suicide bombings against against Israelis. That's what the Biden administration has done, shoveled more money back to the Palestinians. Number four, adopt globalist moral equivalents, like the fact that you just said, Gary, you just said it. It was Hamas that set this all off with attacks. First, the attacks were against Jews inside of the old city, in the streets of the old city at the Damascus Gate, so forth, attacking police up on the Temple Mount. And then it moved to rockets and missiles, which has been going on now for more than a week, over 3,000 at current count. And make some kind of moral equivalence between that, jihadist terrorist attacks, unprovoked against Israel, and now the Israeli Defense Forces using, for example, Iron Dome to intercept incoming rockets and missiles so that they don't kill Israeli citizens at whom they're aimed. And by the way, they're being fired from densely populated civilian areas of Gaza.
Wow. Wow.
So that's a double.
They do not care. They do not care.
I mean, it's more than do not care. They care very much to make it about civilians, to kill their own civilians because they're human shields, and to kill Israeli citizens. At the same time that the Israelis are taking such incredible steps to avoid civilian casualties. I even saw the Washington Post, I think this morning, maybe yesterday, with a piece, I think it was an op-ed, kind of disappointed that the Iron Dome defense system, the air defense system that the Israelis are using to shoot down these missiles and rockets, that it was so disappointed that it was so effective
that it works,
that it wasn't killing more Israeli citizens, to make things even, right? So that's the moral equivalence, the heinousness of making this moral equivalence. And then just finally, from Victor Davis Hanson, the fifth point, do everything the exact opposite of the Trump administration, and what a disaster.
Claire, this is scary. You know, my final question for you, along these lines, and it's a two-part question, and then I'm sure anybody that's listened to this show for a year has to be hardcore by now, so I think you could take anything, and I don't know what you're going to say, but what shape is our national security in, and do you think that people on the left that believe the lies of the left are starting to have buyer's remorse?
Well, second part first, I think perhaps it's inevitable that some who voted for this administration are having buyer's remorse, certainly as they watch our economy collapse, gas lines around the block at the gas stations, southern border overrun, et cetera. Got to be some buyer's remorse there. But about our national security, I'll just give you one example. I was just watching before I came on the radio show with you, watching news program about this military lieutenant colonel, Matthew Lohmeyer. I think it's Lohmeyer. I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name. He was removed from his command in the U.S. military because he wrote a book and then spoke on a podcast about it. And the book was about the infiltration of Marxist ideology inside of the U.S. military and the threat that that poses to our national security. He, the lieutenant colonel, has been removed from his command for doing that.
People, this is what we're up against. This is some scary stuff. Claire, thank you for coming on. Please tell people how they can reach you.
Yes, well...
You got your stuff up and running now? You got everything all straight?
I don't have a website even yet, but videos and radio show links like this one, things that I write, are posted a number of places to include Citizens Commission on National Security, Brannon House's World View Weekend. I have a blog at Newsmax, also at Sharia Crime Stoppers and the United West. I'll always forget some, but at Twitter, on social media, I'm at Claire M. Lopez. Same thing on Facebook, at Claire M. Lopez. Parlay, although I've neglected that a bit for the recent past, but there, I'm there. I think those are the main places for the moment.
Right, because people need to hear what you have to say because you have a wealth of knowledge. Claire, thank you for coming on again. I'm looking forward to hearing you down in Greensville and looking forward to seeing you again because it's been a pleasure getting to know you. And thank you for taking my phone calls. Anytime I call, if I have a question, I'm going to tell you something that happened. I was walking 2 Sundays ago with my buddy. We're out taking a 4-mile walk. And we ran into a couple that said something that I'm not going to repeat, but it was so outlandish that if it were true, it would have been, I would have thought, the biggest news in the world. And I hadn't heard anything. So I called Claire, who just immediately started laughing on the air. Laughing on the phone. So much for that. Thank you for not hanging up on me.
No, I would never do that. But sometimes you just got to wonder.
Yeah, you got to wonder. Well, I knew the expert. I knew who to call. Claire, thank you, and God bless you for what you do, and looking forward to seeing you in Greenville.
You're welcome. See you soon. Thanks, Gary.
Okay. Claire Lopez, people, and she knows what she's talking about. She's got intel information. She's been involved with think tanks and a lot of people, former CIA agent way back in the day, and she knows what she's talking about. To close out this segment of what the Rock the Red, well, actually it's not. We got a little bit more, a little something after this, but you know, K. Carl Smith, I met him down at Rock the Red, and he's a dynamic speaker. And K. Carl is nationally recognized, and he's the creator of the Frederick Douglass Republican Engagement Strategy. And he broke that strategy down at Rock the Red. And I said, boy, this can work, especially for black people, because if you understand who Frederick Douglass was, if you understood why he was Republican, if you understood how this former slave went on to rise above everything to become an advisor to a whole handful of presidents, and that he was a conservative and a free market guy, how can you support the Democratic Party? In fact, K. Carl's book, Frederick Douglass Republicans, The Movement to Reignite America's Passion for Liberty, an anonymous upper-level executive of none other than the NAACP commented, if the message in K. Carl's book gets national attention, the Democratic Party will be a thing of the past. Unfortunately, since they're in the White House, I guess they didn't, enough people didn't read the book, but we'll work on that. K. Carl is also an advisory board member of the Black Voices for Trump. Glad to bring back to the show again, Mr. K. Carl Smith.
How you doing, Gary?
I'm fine. How are you down there, you know, in a place where people get it right? How are you?
Well, for right now, we're getting it right. There's always a challenge every day to keep what we have.
Whoa. If Alabama ever gets it wrong, we're really in trouble.
You know, what's going on in Alabama right now, especially in northern Alabama, in the Huntsville area, Huntsville is really growing. You have a lot of government agencies have relocated to Alabama, in particular like the FBI. They're moving their headquarters and operations to Alabama. You got Space Command there. So Huntsville is growing in terms of government agencies or departments that's here. So with that comes the liberal employees. So Madison County, where Huntsville is slowly turning purples. It was red for a while. It's slowly turning purple. So we got to maintain what we have. We got to get better at messaging. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight.
K. Carl, you know, you have been traveling around. You were traveling around before the China virus hit, and you've traveled around since. Explain this to me as somebody who basically does my show out of my, you know, hidden bunker someplace in New York at the bomb shelter that's way, way underground. That's a joke. But you know what I mean. I'm not out and about. You are. Why is it it's the liberals moving into our red areas and infesting them? Why is it they don't just go to another blue place and screw that up even worse?
Well, the reason why they go to a red place is because they're trying to escape the mess they created in the blue area.
If they go to escape the mess and create the mess in a red area, they're going to turn it blue and it's going to be a mess again.
Well, that's why we know that liberalism is a mental disorder, isn't it?
There you go. There you go.
That's exactly why. Yeah, it's a mental disorder.
I hear you. There you go.
I know a lot of people who were once liberal and they become a conservative, okay? I know a lot of people who had that type of transformation. I don't know anybody that's a conservative that becomes a liberal. Do you?
No, because you were usually a liberal first, like we were, you know, you have that red pill or that Christian awakening moment and go, oh, boy, I got to get on the other side of this thing.
That's right. Once you're liberal, but most of them don't stay a liberal. They become a conservative. So it's just kind of interesting how, you're right, they move from one state to another. They screw one state up with their liberal policies they do work in terms of what they want to achieve. I can't say liberal policies are failing. No, they're working. Based on their desired outcome. but they want to escape that and move to another place and vote the same way and bring the same liberal policies. They don't get it. It is a mental disorder.
And people, I was getting ready to say, he wasn't joking when he called it a mental disorder. Think about this. People are moving out of California in droves, liberals. People are leaving New York in droves. Why? The taxes are too high. The borders are – all this stuff is bad. The businesses are going down here.
Right, right.
Everything is – so you're going to go to Texas or you're going to go to Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, or even what they did to Georgia. You're going to go to a state – that's flourishing. You're going to be in a state where capitalism is working, get involved, and then change the policies liberal so that state will fail so you have to move again. That is a mental disorder.
And you know what, Gary? And I contend that the reason why our problem is as conservatives, we have a brand problem. So much so that the liberals have destroyed our brand, where when you say conservative, you know, people think you're talking about a Nazi or a racist. That's a major brand problem. And think about it, you know, I grew up in Alabama. If I just perceive somebody to be a racist or a sellout to their community, there's nothing they can tell me. I don't care
right.
what the facts are. I don't care what evidence they bring to the table, what truth they speak. I'm not going to listen to somebody I perceive to be a racist or a sellout to their community. That's what we're dealing with. We have truth on our side. We have statistics and evidence, but no one's listening to us because before we get a chance to speak as a conservative, already been discredited. So therefore, our message falls on deaf ears. And in my new book I got coming out, I have a chapter entitled Truth Doesn't Matter, meaning that if I could demonize you so effectively that people think because of your label that you are racist, it doesn't matter what truth you speak, because that truth you speak doesn't matter, because I have what? Demonized you. I have characterized you in a way where you are racist and your response is weak. So the truth you speak doesn't matter.
You know, and sadly, people, one of my big things, anybody that's listened to this show for the last year, is cultural Marxism. And I was trying to explain and bring all these guests on, K. Carl included, to explain to you that Karl Marx's original Marxism didn't work in the United States because we're not going to overthrow a country by revolution. We're not going to have what happened like So they turned to the Frankfurt School, came in through Columbia University, branched out. Cultural Marxism. Instead, we're going to change the language and we're going to change the Western culture. And that is what's happened. He's changed the language to where they're calling you a racist, even though you're not. And it's not even based on what you say. It's based on if you're not on the left, you're automatically a racist. If you like Trump, you're automatically a racist. And if you like Jesus, you're a bigot. So they have totally marginalized this way, and they've gotten away with this to a point, and we've got to put the kibosh on this. Now, hey, Carl, I am really excited. I can't wait to hear you speak. And I don't want you to really get deep into it because I know you need to save it like James Brown for show night. But you are going to be speaking on the truth of the Trump card versus the race card. You gotta give us a couple pearls of wisdom about what that's going to be about.
So basically, my thought is on that. Is it possible? Because some people say you can't prove two negatives. Is it possible to trump the race card, pun intended? Is it possible to change the public perception that conservatives are racist? Is it possible? If it is not possible, it's over with for us. We'll never win the narrative. We'll never get people to listen to us because nobody's not going to listen to someone they perceive as a racist or a sellout or a Nazi. So is it possible? I contend, yes, it is possible. Matter of fact, we've been doing and teaching this engagement philosophy for the past 10 years very effectively when people get out there and employ the Frederick Douglass Republican engagement strategy. So we're going to get into that. I think they're going to give me about 40 minutes to speak, I think it is, Gary. And based on that, I came up with something called keynote training, meaning that in 40 minutes, you're going to be trained, not just – you know, it's going to be a TED speech style delivery, but it's going to be a training program mingle into my keynote. When you come out of that, listen to me for 40 minutes, you're going to know how to engage your family members, your friends, and people who may not look like you regarding your conservative values, and do it in a way where you win the narrative. And not only win the narrative, you win them and inspire them to vote their values. And you may have to explain to them what their values are, but that's how we're going to turn things around. To me, it's all about messaging. It's all about getting in the trenches. Trump has done his job. Trump done his job. He's done his job. We got to do our job for us being more effective and being in the trenches and engaging each other and inspiring people to understand why liberty is so important. And in that presentation I'm gonna explain that the most effective counter liberty message to Marxism is Frederick Douglassism.
I'm glad you went there, because that's where I wanted to just segue right into what you do. And K. Carl is the founder of the Frederick Douglass Republican Engagement Strategy. And this is a strategy to use to give conservatism to people without actually politicizing it. So please explain what the strategy is about and why it's worked successfully for you.
The Frederick Douglass Republican Engagement Strategy is based on the liberty message of Frederick Douglass. So we take the things that Frederick Douglass said about free speech, personal responsibility, economic empowerment, women's rights, religious liberty, the right to keep and bear arms. We take what Frederick Douglass had to say and we leverage that, and we combine that, if you will, we couple that with the diversity outreach strategy of the Apostle Paul. When you really think about it, the Apostle Paul was a diversity outreach specialist.
Absolutely.
He was commissioned by God to go to the Gentile people, different ethnicities. So that's the model. That's the persuasive messaging model, by taking Douglass' liberty message and the tactics of diversity engagement of the Apostle Paul. We put that together. So we teach conservatives not how to talk to black people, but it's more universal than that, how to talk to anyone regarding your conservative values. And you do it in a way where you win the narrative and you don't have the fear of being called a racist or a sellout. And actually, you inspire people to change how they vote. Because once you learn how to win the narrative and you share it with people how they've been lied to and betrayed, that's when they change how they vote. But first, you got to win the narrative. And that's what we're not doing effectively as conservatives.
This is true. Now, people may go, well, why are you using Frederick Douglass? Please explain to them, for those who aren't aware to the extent that they need to be to understand, why Frederick Douglass is the man in this case.
Frederick Douglass is a divine fit for what we're dealing with right now. With Frederick Douglass, the reason why we leverage Frederick Douglass, because he is the ideal embodiment of conservative values. Also, he left us a literary legacy. Douglass wrote all his speeches out. He wrote 3 books. And so this literary legacy is what we leverage to make it part of our liberty message today. So thank God we have the writings of Frederick Douglass to mingle with our own today as we talk about respect for the Constitution, immigration, school choice, the things that Douglass wrote about. So when you leverage the writings of a former slave about his love for liberty, his admiration for the founding fathers and the Constitution, when you leverage Frederick Douglass, the left has no answer for that, and they never will.
This is true, and a lot of people should be understanding now about Black Lives Matter and all these leftist radical groups. It's not about race, because Frederick Douglass is one of the greatest black men to ever live. This was a guy that got it right. This was a former slave that got it right, that was pro-freedom, that was, you know, pro-capitalism, that was pro-God, that got everything right. He should be the role model, not for black people, but he should be a role model for everybody, what you can achieve. And now you're looking around, these people want to tear his statues down, and Black Lives Matter and all these other groups. are trying to disparage this man who, you know, it should be elevated as one of the greatest figures in the history of this country.
Yeah, and you're right, because what's so important, Gary, is that conservatives need to understand that we really need to label ourselves differently. We got to come up with another political identity to describe ourselves, because that the word conservative has been so demonized, it's not working. It's ineffective. And I'm sad to say that, but it's true. So I am a conservative, but in terms of my political identity, I don't use that word, especially when I go to communities where I know that word is taboo. The way I describe myself politically, I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican. And
right.
To be a Frederick Douglass Republican is not based on your skin color. A Frederick Douglass Republican is a person who, what we call, embraces the life and power and values of Douglass. I kind of mentioned some of them briefly earlier. Respect for the Constitution, respect for life, the belief in limited power of government, economic prosperity, free speech, school choice, right to keep and bear arms, women's rights, religious liberty. And these are the things that Douglass wrote about. So that's the literary legacy that we leverage. And so that's what I'll be training and speaking on in a couple of weeks in South Carolina, how to employ the Frederick Douglass Republican engagement strategy, where we can start right now turning things around.
I'm looking forward to hearing it, K. Carl. You were right on point and outstanding, and with your delivery, very forceful. My final question, and then tell people how to reach you. Do you see the worm turning? In other words, do you think there are a large number, especially of blacks, who, you know, under Trump, the unemployment rate was the lowest ever. The people were making more money, businesses were opening, and all this stuff, and all that is totally collapsed. Are you seeing buyer's remorse?
Buyer's remorse has set in, and is really growing. But here's the problem: buyer's remorse is there among those who voted for Biden. But until we improve our image, those having buyer's remorse will not vote for somebody they perceive as a racist. They'll stay at home. Remember when Hillary ran? Over a million blacks did not come out to vote for Hillary, but they didn't vote for President Trump either. But, quote unquote, they see him as a racist. I disagree with that, but that's how the left spins that. So it's so important that we overcome this negative perception that we're racist. If we can't do that, I don't care what buyer's remorse is out there. They're not going to vote somebody they perceive as a racist. That's the problem. In 2 weeks, I'll share with you how to overcome that.
I'm looking forward to hearing it. K. Carl, tell people how to reach you.
The website is kcarlinc.com. K, C as in Charlie, A-R-L-I-N-C, kcarlinc.com. That's the website. Drop me a line and sign up for the free, I said free, Gary, mini course, or the things I'll be talking about next week. It's all in this mini course that we made available.
And tell them how to get your book or books. Tell them how to get you where they can get your books. And get them off the website?
Yeah, when you go through the mini course and when you get to like the second video, you'll see a link in there how to get the book. And I think on the website is about, I got another book coming out in about 2 months entitled Telling Conservatives the Truth. So you can go ahead and pre-order that book.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you're putting that truth out there, because this is what we need to do. Every little bit helps and every little bit counts. Okay, Carl, thank you for coming on again. Looking forward to seeing you down in Greenville.
Look forward to it. God bless you.
God bless you too and your family. Mr. K. Carl Smith, everybody. You know, and those are two speakers, K. Carl and Claire Lopez. This is the type of things that you will hear at the Rock the Red convention coming up in the first week of June. And if anybody has a problem with my show and what I do, and they're saying, why is this guy on radio? And whoever told him he could do this? Whose fault is this? Send your letters and your slings and arrows to my next guest. Because while I was sitting down at Rock the Red, just doing my little thing on Rocky and the Wolfman, you know, just my little segment, a little half hour segment of a 2 hour radio show. They aired every Friday, and I just do my little thing for 15, 20 minutes. I'm sitting at the table with a friend that I had met because he has a big radio show called The Conservative Perspective, which is on this Patriot Nation radio network. His show airs every Tuesday from 7 to 8, and it was Thursday. It may remain or it may move from 7 to 8 on the Patriot Nation radio network, along with the Patriot Nation radio show live. That's Mark Hoffman, the Patriot Nation radio show live. These are my compadres on the network. Mark is on Thursday at 8. Please check him out. Thursday at 8, Mark Hoffman, Patriot Nation radio live show. And James Bostic, host of Conservative Perspective, right? I'm sitting at the table with him Saturday night listening to Doug Collins at Rock the Red. We all decked out in our red, white, and blue suits, the outfits. And he looks over to me and says, Gary, you should have your own show. And I'm not going to say I laughed in his face. I took radio prophetic, whatever he calls it, to, you know, okay, I blew that. I didn't laugh in his face, but I told him I don't want my own show. And then 3 months later, I had my own show. So if you want to blame it on somebody, blame it on my next guest. And you're saying, why are you bringing him on this show? I'm bringing him on his show because we're going back down to Rock the Red, and James dropped a bomb on me that he's going to be dropping some bombs at Rock the Red. So I bring on the big boss man, Mr. James Bostic, host of A Conservative Perspective, to explain what he is going to be doing at the festivities of Rock the Red, and I am looking forward to this.
Hello, Gary. How are
you? Hey, James. How you been?
I'm well. I'm well indeed. Thank you very much. I appreciate you carving out time for me, and I always look forward to coming on your program. So I appreciate you having me on.
Well, and, give people part of the thing is it's not the most difficult thing for you to come on since you're the producer of the show. So it's not like you got to stop lounging or barbecuing or lifting weights or something. You're on the board anyway. But I really appreciate you coming on. And I had no intention of bringing you on this show. I was going to bring you on the anniversary show on the 28th of June until you told me you will literally be dropping bombs at Rock the Red. So fill the people in.
Okay. Well, as you know, and as a lot of people who know me know, I've been a Civil War reenactor for this 26 years. I have been a Civil War reenactor for 26 years, and I am the commander of an artillery unit called Bryan's Battery, and we're stationed here in West Virginia. And just recently, there was a school I had to take the gun to, an artillery school that I took the gun to, and as I was bringing it back...
Tell them what the gun is. It's not okay. A little pop-pop.
No, it's not a little pop-pop. I'll get to that in just a minute. As I said, we're an artillery unit, which means cannons. And we have a full-size 3-inch ordnance rifle. Now, what that means is it's a cannon. It's a muzzle-loading rifle because the tube is rifled like a modern-day rifle would be. The 3-inch is the diameter of the shell, and the shell was about 3 inches around. 3 inches in diameter, and it weighed about 10 pounds. So what we have is a full-size, fully functional reproduction of a Civil War cannon. It was made by a man named Jeff Hayes in Pennsylvania, and he makes guns for the, and when I say guns, I'm referring to cannons, and he makes guns for the Gettysburg National Military Battlefield, National Battlefield Park. And the interesting thing about what Jeff does is when he produces these guns, when he manufactures these guns, and he does it all, from the iron bands on the tires to the wrought iron work on the gun itself, to the wood, to the casting of the barrel, to the rifling of the barrel, you know, the tube. Everything is done using 19th century technology. In other words, he uses the same manufacturing and milling techniques for the wood and the metal that they would have used in a foundry producing these weapons during the Civil War.
Oh, Lord. Lord.
And yeah, that's fascinating. And if our gun were to be placed in a line with similar artillery pieces from 1862, 1863, you couldn't pick it out.
Wow.
That's how authentic, that's how precise this man's work is. And we got a deal on the gun. And what we're going to be doing, I took some pictures of it on the back of the trailer, and I sent them to our friend, Don Newman. And
who
I
will
was
be co-emceeing the Rock the Red with his wife, Donna Fiducia.
Fox News proto babe, Donna Fiducia will be there. And, you know, they killed it last time, and I can't wait to see what they're going to do this year.
Absolutely. Yep.
So I sent him a picture, and I said, wouldn't this be cool if we could have it down there at Rock the Red to open the ceremony? And it was just basically a joke. And that was on a Sunday night. That was probably about 8 o'clock. And by about 11 o'clock, I was in a telephone conversation with Don Newman and Presley Stutz, who was on earlier, talking about the possibility of being able to do just exactly that. And it was like out of nowhere, this thing kind of took a life of its own on it. And the more we started talking about it, the more, you know, we realized, and I was going anyway, as you well know, I'd already told you I'd gotten my ticket, and it was a done deal for me whether we took the gun or not. And so we decided that we would. And so what's going to happen is we're going to have the gun down there, and our crew is going to be there. Melissa, Petri, of course, as you already know.
Hold on one thing. Before you go any farther, please don't let Mel shoot the cannon.
Well, that's going to present a problem, Jerry, because that's what her job is on the gun. So
she may aim it at me.
I may help her.
Okay.
Anyway, so we're going to set the gun up. I'm not exactly sure where yet. When I get down there on Thursday, I'll talk with Presley and see where he wants to place it. And it'll be available just like Danny's bus. If folks want to take a picture with the gun, they'll be able to. My crew, Brian's Battery, will be there. And, of course, that means Melissa, Tim Walker, and a couple other fellas, Roger House and Andrew Valentine, are going to be down there. And we will be conducting demonstrations on how to operate and fire the gun. And there will be periods throughout the weekend when there'll be breaks. You know how they did last time with the segments. They would have breaks in between two or three speakers. And we'll be doing what we do in between those breaks because I don't want to interrupt those guys. But the capper, the thing that's really going to be hot about this, at least personally for me, is as this thing took off and the discussions were made, it eventually evolved into we're going to be doing these demonstrations. We're also going to be firing the gun to open the weekend's events. So we'll run through the drill. We'll fire the gun. They'll play the national anthem. And we'll be there, you know, as I guess kind of like a centerpiece for the opening ceremony. And on Friday night, and this is what Friday and Saturday night, and this is where I'm really getting jacked up about it. A couple of speakers, celebrities from the event, will be called upon to fire the gun. On Friday night, Lynn Wood, the attorney who worked in terms of election integrity after what happened in November, Lynn Wood will be one of them. And another celebrity, I'm not exactly sure who it's going to be, but Lynn Wood will be on Friday night with another featured speaker. And on Saturday night,
I know you're excited about this. So am I.
Yeah. General Flynn will be pulling another speaker that Presley's going to tell me about, I guess, when we get down there. General Flynn will be pulling, just before dinner, will be pulling the lanyard on our gun. This is a tremendous honor. And I'm
so happy for you, man.
I'm a little bit giddy about it, but I really am. This is going to be something huge. And it is, but you know, it's all this I got to say right now, it is due to Don Newman. And as I've said many times before, when I talk about Don and Donna, I have been exposed to a lot of great, just as you have, Gary, because many of them are the same folks. To a lot of tremendous people in podcasting and doing this kind of thing. And so many of the good things that have happened to me in doing this have flowed from Don Newman, Donna Fiducia, and Ron Phillips at Mojo 5-0. You know, I have a we do the show Tuesdays and Thursdays on Blog Talk for Patriot Radio, and Tuesdays is a 2-hour show, 7 to 9. Thursdays, 7 to 8, and then El Guapo comes on. And lost my train of thought there. And we all, and Ron Phillips, who does Mojo 5-0 Radio Network. Those guys are going to be down there. Rocky Stucci is going to be down there. And, you know, so many of the people, the great folks that we met last year, and a plethora, I mean, a cornucopia of outstanding people. Stucci's a great guy. Ron Phillips is rock solid at Mojo. And it's going to be an exciting time. And I'm really looking forward to it. I really am.
I am too, but I got to warn you about one thing. We know how Don Newman is. Like, you know, he's wrecked my show 3 times, which is fun. That buckwheat routine he did
had Donna scurrying.
Donna's like, I don't want to be a part of this. And she's bing, gone, right? This buckwheat, his buckwheat routine, you know, could have got me thrown off radio. But that's a joke. But you got to watch out when Newman offers you something. Because you got to make sure before you fire this thing, he's not trying to pull one of those Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner things where the thing's going to blow up and leave you all black.
A big stick comes out the end of it.
Right. Here's how you protect against that. When you jack that cannon up and blast it, make sure Newman is standing next to you. That's the way to make sure there's not going to be any monkey business going on.
Make sure he's standing in front of it.
There you go.
But really, go ahead.
Forget
about him, but really, he's, as I said, this whole thing with the cannon, and it's just a great blessing for us. And you, started out as a joke. It started out as a joke, but thanks to Don Newman, in many respects, Brian's battery is in a great position to steal the show with this thing, and I owe it all to Don. You know,
as I said, I'm looking forward to this because people, you know, see, I know James and his crew do the Civil War enactment, and they put on the North and the South uniforms, and they shoot the cannon. They can do this because they're in the South; they can get away with this. Try that in New York; I'll be under the jail. But the point of the matter was, I know they have this cannon, and I bring the cannon up on the show a lot. In fact, 2 people actually wanted to borrow it. Jan Morgan in Arkansas and Brigitte Gabriel. Oh, he's got a cannon. I think even Star Parker was like, yeah, I may need that cannon in D.C., the way these liberals are acting. You know, can I borrow your cannon? So the cannon has been a joke on the show for a long time with several guests because when they're talking about all the problems they're having with liberals, I say, well, the guy that brought you on in the Green Movement that talked to you, my producer, James Bossett, he's got a cannon. And Jan's like, got a cannon? Yeah, can I borrow it? You know, so it's finally the cannon is going to get put to use. Now, my final question, James, tell the people what Rock the Red was like for you, because I told them what it was like for me the last time around, and the insight that you got from that helped you this year or the last year and a half on your show, Conservative Perspective, Patriot Nation Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. It's on Tuesday and Thursday from 7 to 8.
Well, to use a Civil War term, I wanted to see the elephant. And in those days, what that meant was you wanted to see the great battle. You wanted to see the big fight. And I've always wanted to go to one of these things. And so I said, you know what? Let's go. We'll just go. And we did, and I did, and it was terrific, and it was a chance, number one. I knew you were going to be there, so I was going to get to meet you face-to-face. The same thing with Don and Donna, and even though it had been a couple of years since I'd interviewed Trevor, and I'm sure he probably didn't remember, but he was really gracious about it, and it was great. It was not only my first big interview, it was my first interview, and he was terrific, and to meet these people, and it was really energizing. I mean, it was really kind of, I guess that's the best word to use is energizing. I came back from it feeling really positive on a lot of levels. Number one, I got to meet all my friends in this business. Plus, I made some new acquaintances. You know, I struck up a terrific friendship with our pal Michael Cutler,
mm-hmm.
who is a regular on the show. And, you know, again, meeting these people, Claire Lopez, Trevor Loudon, Tom Del Beccaro, all these guys that we sat and we confabbed with after dinner.
The Lemmy.
The Lemmy, yeah. The Brooklyn.
Gene Ho, yeah.
all these people. And again, another, there you go. This is another one of the good things that happened to me that flowed from Don and Donna. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited that we're going to be able to play a role. You know, our unit, Brian's Battery, is going to be playing a role in this. I'm really honored about that. And, of course, General Flynn firing this gun.
I know. When you told me, I could hear it in your voice that you were just so excited. Make sure you give the order right, James. Don't mess the order up because he's a lieutenant general. You know, there's pressure.
I've been calling shots for 20 years.
Right. And I'm going to be filming this. So I'll be standing there with the camera going. So, you know, maybe we should practice it. Yeah.
It's going to be exciting, and I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, like I said, and
it's an honor.
It is, yeah. I guess that's the best way to put it. And even more so to be, you know, to be allowed to be a part of it.
Hey, absolutely. You know, I'm so glad you are.
Hanging out, and I really am. It's a great honor. Like I said, the general's going to be pulling a lanyard on the gun, and these other notables as well, not to take anything away from Lynn Wood or the other two celebrities to be named at a later date.
Yeah, well,
it's going to be a great time.
I'm with you. So, James, thanks for coming on, I'm looking forward to seeing you in West Virginia. I'm not Virginia, excuse me, South Carolina.
One last thing before I go.
Yeah.
You know, we had talked, because I'm going to bring up Barbara from Harlem's on. I'm going to go ahead and bring her. We had a discussion, I guess, one day last weekend, and you had never heard what I say to the guests when they call in.
So you told me. I was impressed.
Yeah, so, well, thank you very much. Well, hopefully, unless she decides to play a trick on me, we'll bring Miss Barbara up, and she can let you know if she has any criticisms as to how she was handled. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and do that right now. Miss Barbara, I'm going to bring you up myself. Ladies and gentlemen, our friend Miss Barbara from Harlem, welcome to Gary's program. And I'm gone.
Okay, so glad to be here.
Hi, Barbara. Now, let me tell you something about the person that you just talked to, James Bostic, who's my show's producer. Okay, the first time we went down to Rock the Red, it was 2019, and I was doing live radio out of my suite, and he was supposed to be on the show, driving from his state in the South, but he hadn't made it. So I'm in my room in the embassy suites with a sign on the door that says, "Do not disturb, radio show in progress." Claire Lopez, who was a guest on this show earlier tonight, is sitting across from me doing her interview at about 8:15 live radio, and I hear a knock on the door. She kept talking. I go up and open the door. There's this big guy. He walks in and he says, "House detective." And I'm like, oh, snap. Don't tell me they're going to shut my broadcast. The house detective's here. They're going to shut my broadcast down right in the middle of the broadcast on live radio. And then he goes, "James Bostic, a conservative perspective." That's how I met the guy that just brought you on the show, my bud, James Bostic. So I owe him one. But that's what he did. Barbara from Harlem was on the previous broadcast 2 weeks ago, and she's back by popular demand because it lit up my Facebook page. She just got such a response. I was going to bring her back anyway, but the main thing was, since the poker was hot, I said, let's strike right again, because her book, Escaping the Racism of Low Expectations, I really want to get into that. And we'll talk about a little bit about some other things, but Barbara's a Christian, an American, a minister. She's an author, a native New Yorker. She was a Democrat, saw the light, has come around to understanding about God's family, country, constitution. It's a completely different place. So I want to welcome back Barbara from Harlem. And boy, did you lay it out and lay some people out on the last broadcast. So thank you for returning to the show.
Well, thank you for having me again. I really enjoyed the last time, and I know I'm going to enjoy this trip also.
Yeah. Well, yes, because I just want you to do your thing. And can you tell the people your background? And then I want to get into your book.
Well, my background, as you said, I am a native New Yorker. Now, for some period of my life, I did reside in Florida for a few years after my marriage dissolved. So I went there and lived for about 14 years. But I grew up at the time when you turned 21, you had to register to vote. And I registered, you know, in my community, black equals Democrat. So, of course, when I turned 21, I registered as a Democrat. And I am of the mindset that anything I do, excuse me, I'm a little hoarse tonight, I want to know everything mm-hmm. about it. So it was later on in life that I decided to venture into politics. And I joined several Democratic clubs just to see what was going on and how could I be of assistance. It was there that I learned that the ideology that they were shoving down the throats of black people, it was not conducive to people fulfilling their potential. It was an ideology of hating white people because of something that happened before we were even born, slavery. So I had a conflict of my personhood, and it was during the time that Giuliani was running for mayor of New York against David Dinkins that I decided party isn't as important as having someone who can do the job very well. So, Paina Rudy Giuliani, while I was still a member of the Democratic Club, but, you know, I came to the point in my life that the Democratic Party conflicted with what I learned in church, to love thy neighbor, not to hold grudges, not to hate people who have long ago answered to their maker for any atrocities that they have committed. It didn't make sense to me. I was a member of Charlie Rangel's club. That was one of the clubs I was a member of.
Oh, my God.
Yes, yes, yes.
That hit me the first. I knew it. I'm just giving you the jizz. But I knew that the first time. I'm like, oh, my gosh. If you live in New York, you know what I mean, people.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know, and every time he ran for office, he said he was a champion of the family. Well, what I saw in the black community in Harlem was that the families were deteriorating. What I saw was that more families were broken and shattered. More children were being born without a father in the home because their message was, you don't need a man. And I saw how devastating that was where I lived, how these children started being born with not even the name of a father on their birth certificate. So I knew something was wrong. So I learned to put God first, country, and I had to have peace with my conscience. I couldn't very well keep supporting something that told me that I was supposed to hate white people, that I was supposed to hate Jewish people, and that I was supposed to become a victim for them to rescue me. I didn't need rescuing when I have God.
Amen to that. Now, Barbara, I'm going to ask you the question that I've asked a lot of guests, and it's I don't even know if you know how to answer it because I don't even know how I answered it as a person who was a Democrat until I was 47 years old, even though I was going to church the whole time. How do we remain, like as you said, eventually you looked at the word of God and you saw what God said. Yes. But that word we were reading for 27 years while I was a Democrat. That word never changed. Why was it we couldn't figure this out sooner? But like, in other words, thou shalt not kill. But, you know, God's two covenants in the garden, the sanctity of life, you can't take it after Cain killed Abel, and marriage between Adam and Eve, and the two shall become one flesh. That the Democratic Party is dead against both of those. We've known that even when we were a Democrat going to church. And I was going way back in the day to predominantly black churches, by congregational churches, where they preach the word right. And then tell us, now here's our Democratic Party friends. They trot all the politicians in New York up up in front of the pulpit and tell us to vote for him.
Yes, they did. Yes, they
why
did.
Couldn't
yes,
we did. See? Why couldn't we? Wait a minute. You're for abortion. Wait a minute. You want to kill go ahead.
Well, Gary, they were very particular about what they taught or call themselves teaching. I don't recall too many sermons about the sanctity of marriage. I didn't hear them talk about morality. It was call them up, tell them what you want.
Gotcha.
I didn't hear any sermons about how precious life is. Neither did I hear too many sermons about when Jesus said, you worship me with your lips, but your heart is far from me. I didn't hear anyone explaining what that means. It wasn't until I started getting into the Bible for myself. As a matter of fact, they don't even push or promote us looking at the scriptures, writing things down, and doing our own study when the Bible tells us to meditate on the word. We skip over a lot of things. We ignore them, and we give people a feel-good message. We give them a message that they can live like hell but still go to heaven, which is very misleading.
You know, you nail that, because now that I think of it, it was the same with me. That's not what they they were preaching civil rights. They're preaching the white man's the devil. They were talking about how the black man is the chosen. And what was weird, they'd have Black History Month in the Church of Jesus Christ. And I couldn't figure out, why are they talking about Malcolm X and Paul Robeson, who was a communist? And these people in the Church of Christ, these weren't born again, blood bought believers of Christ, but and a bit, boy, and when my eyes got open, just like you, you saw it, and I said, whoa, people, I love, and you, because you love people. And by the way, when you get born again, the Spirit of the Lord comes into you, and you start seeing things from Jesus' point of view. So now you start seeing them as the mission field, and you want to save your brothers and your sisters, your family, your husbands and your wives. And I went and tried to tell everybody you're voting wrong, and boy, they did not want to hear it at all.
Right.
I know you had the same issue, right?
You're absolutely right, but you know what? You hit on a key thing. You see, they think that they're saved because they go to church, pay their tithes, sing in the choir, and usher up and down they don't have the Spirit of Christ, because the Spirit of Christ would lead them to truth, and they would not reject it or ignore it. We walk and we're supposed to live by the Spirit. The Holy Spirit indwells a believer. And the Holy Spirit is going to tell you something is wrong. Something is wrong. Look here, look there. And the Holy Spirit, Holy God, will send someone in your life to help enlighten you. And you can't keep going the same way. So the Holy Spirit is not guiding these people, because it's leading them to vote for people who say kill the babies. When the Bible is very clear in Proverbs, God hates hands that shed innocent blood. Well, some of them may say, well, I'm not killing any babies, but you're putting the instruments in the hands of those who are killing the babies, and you're going to have to answer for that, because you're an accomplice.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
And you know what I do? I tell people, I explain it this way. I try and explain it biblically, because even if you don't know your Bible, you've either seen the Ten Commandments, you've either seen Jesus of Nazareth, the Passion of the Christ, or you've seen some Jesus movie. It would be like you're following Jesus, you're watching him heal the sick, and you're watching him the lame, the blind, everybody you watch, you know he's the Messiah, you know what he is, and Pontius Pilate stands two people up there and he says, who do you want me to release? Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, do you want me to release this murderous insurrectionist? Barabbas.
Absolutely.
And the people said, give me Barabbas. It's just it's not going to happen, people. You've got to do this God's way, and if you have the Holy Spirit, he will lead you into truth. Barbara, how is it for you now? In other words, where you are, how do you deal with these people that don't want to hear it? Do you dust your feet and you move on, or do you really try and debate or try and find a way to find a common ground to try and talk to people who just don't see it this way?
Well, I try to do the best I can, and I must say, by the grace of God, I planted some seeds, and he watered and he produced. People who have never voted for a Democrat before changed their minds, because...
You mean a Republican before? Never voted for a Republican before.
They've never voted for a Republican before.
Right.
I have some people who, particularly a lady in Brooklyn, that happened to call me because, you know, we used to be on Christian Talk Radio. Anyway, she was talking about Sharpton, so I just came out and told her. I said, well, he's a charlatan. He's not a man of God, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, why would you say that? So I explained it to her, that I went through what the Democratic Party stands for, and I compared it with the Bible. And she was able to even get three of her friends to change their minds and stop voting
Amen.
For the Democratic Party this last election. That's what she said. Now, there are some. I have a pastor who was a friend of my family for over 20 years. And in 2019, I believe it was, my daughter who lives where he lives, which is in Atlanta, one of my daughters, and I have been talking to him about the Democratic Party. Well, it didn't change him at all. And he's a preacher, a pastor. So I don't associate with him anymore, because if the word of God doesn't change him and the word of God is not penetrating him, I will not discuss the Bible with him. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm through. Because he finally told me, he said, I don't want to read anything. I don't want to learn anything new. But see, he even wants me to come down here and speak at his church, but I refuse. I'm not going. Because, you know, he doesn't believe in the word of God. So I don't care how many titles he has or whatever. I don't respect that. Now, I would tell people, even during the time of Obama, I said, you know, I meet people and somehow or another we start talking about politics. And I said, well, I can't vote for him because he believes in killing babies. I said, and as a matter of fact, I knew someone believed in killing babies, I would never call myself a Christian again. Now, I have never gotten a response from anyone I've told that to. They usually walk away from me. They have no answer. But at least I planted the seed.
Amen to that.
Every time the door opens a little bit, I jump through it.
That's all you can do. And as you know, Jesus said, like with the pastor, there's a time to dust your feet. But as you know, I'm sure you know this scripture. My sheep hear my voice. They know me. My sheep hear my scripture. I'm sure you know. My sheep hear my voice. They know me and they follow me. There are sheep and there are goats. If you belong to Christ, if you were of that seed, if you are somebody that the Lord knows on your heart, you know, will want to be freed from this fall in the garden, and to be brought back to life. You know, God, it's salvation message is open to everybody, and there are sheep and goats. It's hard to understand that because you've tried so hard with people you love because you've seen the light. We understand there is a literal hell, and we just don't want anybody to go there. But you got to understand, I'm sure you know, a lot of these people, they would not be comfortable in heaven. They just wouldn't be comfortable around goodness, and they wouldn't be comfortable about God, his light, and his son, and righteousness.
True.
It's all about holiness. You see, perfect people, only perfect people go to heaven. We only get there, right, by Jesus' imputed righteousness that comes from what he did on the cross, nothing that we can
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
Right. Barbara?
You summed it up perfectly. You know, and Jesus says, when he sets you free, you'll be set free indeed. And I wish more people who go to church, I call them churches, will step into that freedom that Jesus offers. When you become free, then you're not tied down by CNN, MSNBC, or a party. You want to do what's right in his eyesight because you love him.
And as you know, who the Son sets free will be free indeed.
Be
so, Barbara,
indeed.
I'm going to give you opportunity here to set some people free, escaping the racism of low expectations. Now, I remember growing up, I was a kid in the 50s, and I remember in Summit, New Jersey, a suburban, nice town, nothing wrong with it, suburban town in Summit, New Jersey, primarily white, 88% white, about 12% black. And the hotel, couldn't sleep in the hotel. Black people couldn't sleep there. When my relatives came from South Carolina, Pittsburgh to visit, we couldn't fit them all in the house, had to stay in the Holiday Inn down in Springfield, New Jersey. There were certain things that I could not do. I remember there's only one time my parents ever apologized to me. And that was when they really reamed me in the sixth grade because there was an offer of a thing called Hobby Hall where you would learn social dancing. And they found out that this class was being held, I think, every Thursday. And there was a flyer that my next door neighbor, who was white, got about attending Hobby Hall. And they thought I hid that flyer from them. And they gave it to me as a sixth grader. And then later found out it was not given to the black kids. It's the only time my family ever, my mother and father, in tears, apologized. They didn't beat me, but they gave, they did something. I don't remember what they did, but they were really ticked off because they wanted me to get the same education that the white kids got, and they thought that I intentionally had not given them that flyer for me to sign up for Hobby Hall. No black kids got it. The point I'm trying to make, that was real racism. I remember as a senior, as a freshman in college, going St. John's Arena, not the one, the St. John's in New York, the one on the Ohio State College campus to see the NCAA basketball tournament. It was Notre Dame. It was Iowa. It was Kentucky. And it was Jacksonville, who ended up winning the NCAA championship. We went to that regional, me and three other black guys, and Jerry Bradbury from Chicago's yellow Volkswagen Beetle on the way back to campus. We stopped in a truck stop, 1 a.m. You could see it was a good old boy place. I'm from New Jersey. I'm a wise guy. I don't know anything. They weren't serving us. So I went to the counter, and the guy goes, "We don't serve niggas here." I said, "That's all right. I don't need them." He said, "Oh, wise guy." He went back and got his shotgun. We ran out of there, got stuck in a ditch. Thank God that car pulled out of that ditch before that guy started firing. I know what real racism looks like.
When did this happen at? What state was
that? That was 1970 in outside of Columbus, Ohio.
I'm a college freshman.
I know what real racism, and I was being a wise guy, but I'm not expecting the guy to go get a gun I don't know if he would have fired, but we got in, and Jerry, he's got this Volkswagen Beetle, and he's flooring it. And it just created a tire ditch, and that he gunned it, and we just pulled out of there right when that guy came out with the shotgun. I don't know if he was going to fire or not. We did not stick around long enough to find out.
I have seen real racism.
Explain escaping the racism of low expectations. Please tell people the difference between real racism and what we have today.
Absolutely. What we have today, I mean, these young people who are out here ripping things up that they didn't pay for. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I'm quite sure they didn't experience anything that you've experienced. And I lived during the time, and I experienced going down, traveling to Florida back and forth, you know, to visit my grandmother. I saw the fountains that said colored and white. I saw those things. And when I went down there, I think my mother sent me down there like in the fourth or fifth grade. And we went to an all-black school. We went to a school that didn't get the books, didn't get new books. They got the books from the white school and would give them to the black school. And that's racism. And what you experience is racism. What these young people have experienced today is nothing but a bunch of talk. We've come so far in this country. People like you, people like my brother, people like my grandmother and my mother, they had to go through hard times. They had to go through things that these young people don't even know about. When my mother used to travel from New York, Florida, to visit my grandmother, we get to the South, go across that Mason-Dixon line. They wanted black people to go in the back. Well, my mother was very fluent in French. My mother would tell us to be quiet, and this is included in my book. I never went to the back of any restaurant, even as a little girl. My mother started whipping out that French, pointing to things. They started apologizing. We walked in the front door. We got our hamburgers. We got our frankfurters. We got our sodas. We went to the car, and my mother drove off, and we laughed all the way. They don't even know what racism is. They don't know that people who are darker than me and them come to this country for freedoms, for liberties that they don't have in their land. You have the opportunities here. You can start a business here. You can do so many things in this country besides stand on the corner saying, no justice, no peace.
Barbara, you still nailed it. The last experience I had, this was chilling. And it wasn't chilling because it was dangerous. It was chilling because it happened in 1985. I was writing for Newsday, you know, the New York newspaper, and I was covering the Knicks. That was my beat. This was Patrick Ewing's second year on the team, and they played an exhibition game at the Citadel, which is the military academy in Charleston, South Carolina. And they played the Atlanta Hawks in this preseason game. Dominique Wilkins is on the Hawks. Kevin Willis was a rookie. And the Knicks and all these people came to the game in the Citadel, and they actually had a balcony for the black people. And Charles Oakley, and you know, Oakley wasn't there yet. Patrick Ewing and the Knicks and Dominique Wilkins were furious. And they were trying to tell the black people, no, you can come sit down on the court side. They wouldn't come. They were terrified. This is 1985. I kid you not. I couldn't believe it. Then I was walking outside around the town, and they had little nooses hanging from telephone poles. 1985.
Wow.
I call my mother, who's originally from born and raised in Timminsville, South Carolina. I called her long distance. I said, Mom, why the hell were you raised? And I told her the story. I'll never forget what she said to me. She said, now, son, you can't be acting down there in the South like you do up here in New York. That was her. See, do you remember back in the day, you could only have one black comic. Either Richard Pryor was on top, Eddie Murphy was on top, Bill Cosby was on top, Red Fox was on top, but you couldn't have like George Carlin and Robert Klein and Rodney Dangerfield. There was only room for one. Look at what's happening now. The television is flooded with black. You got all the rappers. You got everybody, Oprah, Michael Jordan. You got all these people at the shows, Jay-Z, all the rappers, LeBron James. Everybody, people have been bending over backwards to appease these leftists, and they're going to call this racism in America now?
They some of these blacks who have made it and who have money in their pockets and all that should be ashamed of themselves, but they are not. Because if this country was so racist, how are you a millionaire or a billionaire? You have white people's money. How did Obama get elected twice in America?
Thank you.
Twice.
White people had to elect them.
They do to black people what these some of these leftists are doing. They're just that as a lot of these whites who want to make black people into victims. I have no respect for LeBron James or Oprah, any of them, because they want to talk about racism, but yet and still it's white people. When you see their audiences, when you see the people who come to the games, it's packed with white people.
And let's tell them the dirty little secret.
That they can't make it here in America. They have stripped our young people of their dreams, of their aspirations, and of the desire to reach their full potential. And it's so unfair.
Right, and let's tell them the dirty little secret. What neighborhoods do LeBron James and Oprah live in? Are they living in a black neighborhood, or are they living in a gated white community?
You got that right. And look where Obama and his wife live. Mama,
hey, all I know is I wrote you about my music background, and, you know, I love James Brown and all kind of people. And I remember talking to people about back in the day where they had to do the Chitlin' Circuit and some of these places in the South. You had whites on one side of the room. You had blacks on the other side of the room, right? Now you look at all these rappers. Could you imagine in 1950 and some rappers got up there talking about thug life, right, you know, beating up and women, drugs, and killing cops like Snoop. Where would first off, they couldn't get on the radio, and if they tried to do it live, what would have happened to them? Come on.
I know. I mean, it's disgusting to hear some of what they call music today. It's very disturbing. You know, sometimes, you know, I'm riding in the car, and they have their windows down, and I can hear the lyrics. I don't even see how black women can even listen to any of that or have it played around them, because it degrades women to a level that, I mean, it's almost unreal to hear the vulgarity. That's not music. You know, they say music calms the savage beast, but that music will bring the beast out in anyone. It's not
absolutely
calming, and it's not soothing. You know,
well,
it's disgraceful.
I need you to do something for me, Barbara. You said that'll bring the beast out, and what I need you to do is bring your message out. Tell the people the message of your book. What is the message of escaping the racism of low expectations? What do you want America to know to get out of that rabbit hole?
Well, number one, we have to remember that this country was founded on Judeo-Christian values, principles, and ethics. We need to go back and remember that, because we've lost our footing somewhere along the way with all of this socialism and communism and Marxism hitting the air in our churches, particularly in the black community. They have failed us tremendously. You know, when we came out of slavery, we could depend on the black church to help stabilize the family and help keep our communities on a path of progress, you know, making progress in families, in marriage, et cetera, et cetera. We have lost our way, and we have put God aside. We need to go back and remember, this is the only nation that I know of that was founded on Judeo-Christian values. We need to start rebuilding the family, the black family, because as the family goes, so our country goes. And right now, our country is in trouble, I see. That's what I believe. So Escaping the Racism is a book that should let people know that I don't care where you were born. I don't care what circumstances, you know, whatever happened. In other words, you may have come from a single-headed household, but that doesn't mean you have to fail in life. You're in a land where you have opportunities that you can blossom, you can fly. We are all endowed by our Creator, and we have the right to secure our own happiness. We don't have to be dependent upon the government. That's one thing I learned from my mother and my grandmother. And my mother, when she my father abandoned us, she never went on welfare. She learned how to work. She did a hair on the side to make it. And I want people to know that in spite of the circumstances, you may have been given a bad cup of tea or, you know, a sour lemon or whatever, but you can still make it. I had to raise five children, and for the most part, I'm very proud of all of them because they all are degreed and they're all, you know, doing something in life that's positive. Now, I've lost one son along the way, my youngest son, but he was a very positive role model. Yes,
yeah.
You know, and I want people to know when they read that book, you don't have to be stuck in one track. You don't let other people determine your future. You make your own future, you know, and by the grace of God. But we need God back in our homes. We need God back in our hearts and for God to guide us to successful lives, not lives dependent upon the government or letting a party tell you that it takes a village to raise a child. No, it takes a mother. It takes a father, wise mother and wise father, you know. And these things, I think we've put on the back burner. And I believe
I understand what you're saying, Barbara.
Yes.
I understand.
Yes.
And this is what we have to do. Barbara, I thank you for coming back because the show is getting ready to come to a close. You're always welcome to come back on the show. Please tell people how to reach you and where to hear your radio show you do with your daughter, Bebe Reed, our urban story. Please tell people where they can contact you and about your radio show.
Okay, we're on DDV Radio, and I said changing to Blue Network Broadcasting. But that's on Saturdays, and they can go to our website, which is BarbaraFromHarlem.com. They can find out about getting the book, and we can send them an autographed copy of the book. Plus, we have a little gift that we want to send out with the book. You know, I'll personally sign it. And my email address is BarbaraFromHarlem, USA@Yahoo.com. You're welcome to send me an email. You're welcome to go to our website. And please, let's all stay together because we want God to continue to bless the United States of America and each and every one of us.
Barbara, thank you very much for coming on. I'm always welcome on the show. Barbara from Harlem, everybody.
Thank you for having me, Gary. I appreciate it.
God bless you. God bless. And everybody, that's it for tonight. Hope you'll check out Rock the Red. I want to thank K. Carl Smith, Claire Lopez, Presley Stutz, James Big Man Bostic, and Barbara from Harlem for a great, great show. God bless you. God bless the USA, and God bless your family, and always God bless America.